The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, Miss Kimmy Lee of TripleCronConja.com in Pensacola, Florida, and in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Conja Mentally, and this week's special guest member from AIR, subbing in for our wonderful Miss Cat, Madam Nadia of MadamNadia.com. And this week we'll also be joined by a special guest, reader from the Association of Innocent Root Workers, Professor Ames of Skullbone Emporium.com in Fort Colorado. Together, they will call and offer advice to address, ameliorate, and remediate your questions and problems about love, money, career, and spiritual protection using traditional African-American folk magic practices of hoodoo, conjure, or root work as divined and prescribed by the greatest spiritual hoodooists of our times. You can learn a lot just by listening, but if you're selected from among those who signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and called into the show, then you'll be on the AIR and receive a free consultation. We'll be going to the phones in just a moment, but first, let's catch up with our co-host, Conja Mentally, and this week's special guest from AIR, Madam Nadia. Conja Mentally?
Hey, Miss Emily. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. As always, you are great. How are things on your end?
Things are just absolutely super-duper. We dodged another hurricane here, Florida, Hurricane Alley. And I have to say this because we all love the thunder and lightning, and Florida is the lightning capital of the world, for those of you that don't know this. But we dodged a hurricane and a tropical storm, and it's now just a tropical low that I'm watching come in right off the waters as we speak. So it's all fine and good right here where we are, and just happy
well, we
to be here today.
Well, we hope that you stay dry and that you stay safe. But you're right, it definitely is the storm capital and hurricane capital of the United States. Miss Cat is not going to be able to join us today. She is out of town visiting family, so we wish her a safe trip. And today we have the lovely Madam Nadia stepping in to fill in the shoes of Miss Cat, and we have Professor Ames as our guest reader. So we have a wonderful lineup. Very excited. Just a little bit of, updates and news on my end. I have been working hard at my website, trying to build the geomancy page, and it should go live next week, which is very exciting because I am all about promoting geomancy and getting it out there once more. It's kind of been eclipsed for a while. I would say several hundred years, actually.
I was going to say, just a little while.
Yeah. Ever since the Renaissance. So I'm looking forward to getting that page up there and up there soon. And people so far have had, a great deal of interest in those life readings that I do with humans. And they are definitely, definitely popular, which is exciting and it makes me happy. So that's all the news there is for me. Nothing too much more to report. Let's check in with our substitute co-host today. Madam Nadia, how are you doing today, my dear?
I am doing very well, and I'm so happy, Conja Mentally, that you're setting up those readings because, folks, they are amazing. I had the pleasure and the luck to receive one of those readings from Conja Mentally, and it's just mind-blowing. It's completely different.
Oh,
it's an experience that, it's not your astrology. It just so deeper, and I recommend it to everybody. So if you can do it, go ahead and schedule an appointment with Conja Mentally. You will not regret it, I'm sure.
Oh, that's very kind of you. It means a great deal coming from such a wonderful reader like yourself.
Oh, thank you. You're too kind, Conja Mentally. I have been very, very, very busy talking about websites. I am working on developing my website a little bit and have a very cool team of people that's supporting me on that. And in addition, still coming out of my deep work with St. Cyprian. I dedicated pretty much the whole month of September to St. Cyprian, and I know you mentioned your beautiful offering last week, and and you know that you're an influence in my St. Cyprian practice. But what I undertook for before the 26th is that I did a special ceremony with St. Cyprian where you dedicate his statue to him, and it's very involved ceremony that takes 9 days, and, you know, spend some time in the cemetery, buried a few things there.
Right.
It was quite powerful things. I'm really grateful to the Wolf and the Goat store because they gave me, supplied me with this most amazing St. Cyprian oil. I thought I'm going to start levitating. And so I did that. And then in addition, I felt very strongly to do a special offering, which is a type of altar. I connected with a good friend, Mr. V. Specter.
I am.
Yes, he is of Rose of the Skull on Etsy and CigarBoxAltar.com online. And he makes this amazing portable altars made of cigar boxes. And I had this vision in my head that I wanted to do something like that. So I contacted him, and we are making something very unique. We're making 9 limited edition boxes that have been consecrated on St. Cyprian's Feast Day. And some of the items have been buried in the cemetery for a while, and it's really going to be about enhancing your personal power, necromantic abilities, connection to St. Cyprian, and also those who not particularly want to share their devotion to St. Cyprian with others. It's a very wonderful idea because they can sort of hide it in that box.
I'm seeing these boxes, and it was a collective joint effort between yourself and Mr. V. Specter, and they are beautiful and absolutely stunning, and you can really feel the power of St. Cyprian, you know, infused into the boxes. They really are a stunning piece of work and an amazing devotional piece of work that connects people to spirit. If people are interested in this, these altar boxes, how do they get them?
Well, hopefully all the preparations are going to be done by Hallow's Eve, by Halloween. And then we are probably going to have them for sale on Mr. V's Etsy page. And each box is going to be very different. It's on energy. It's going to have beautiful items in it, like high-quality playing cards and a mirror for scrying, blessed candles, and some other goodies. So everything is going to be completely different. Limited edition, because it's going to be only 9 of those made. These are the instructions that I got from St. Cyprian. And, yeah, you'll be able to find them on Etsy. And if you follow my blog or my Instagram or my Facebook, you'll know, and I'll put a notice when we're ready to put them out.
Very cool. Do let us know about that and keep us updated, because I'm sure there's several people who would be interested in those boxes. That is very exciting news, Madam Nadia. I do want to bring in our wonderful guest, Professor Ames. Thank you for joining us today, Professor Ames. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Trying to think of what's going on here. I've recently moved from Kansas City to Fort Collins, Colorado, so I'm out on the Front Range. Beautiful view from our windows to the Rockies, and they're already snow-capped, so very picturesque.
Oh, wonderful.
As you know, Tammy Lee was talking about dodging a bullet. You probably in the news heard all about the floods here in Colorado. We were very lucky. Our immediate area, and by meaning the blocks around us, were totally fine. No incidental flooding. But it really was pretty astounding with the rivers overflowing, and that became the major problem, and that would undermine the roads, and a lot of the roads got cut off, and still there are a lot of people who are pretty isolated and unable to get back to their homes, if the homes exist. So our prayers go out.
Wow. Well, prayers definitely go out to that area, and weather trouble is always, in my opinion, the worst type of trouble, because there's very little you can do about it.
Yeah, you feel powerless.
Yeah, you do feel powerless. But then, of course, there is experimentations in weather magic, but that is a topic for another time.
I'd love to hear that one.
Professor James was brought up earlier. Yeah, go ahead.
One of the funny side effects of this is because so much got dredged up and now it's receding in so much water, we're now having a large fly infestation. So it's practically something out of, you know, Charlton Heston biblical kind of thing going on here. Flood.
Oh, wow.
Flies, locusts, I'm sure we know.
A little bit apocalyptic there, but...
A little bit. But I'm not going to be too worried yet.
Right. Professor Ames actually brought up a very interesting topic for our panel discussion, and one that I want to turn to now, and that is altar building. This is one of the more fundamental topics in Conjure, and one that we actually don't discuss very often, and I don't believe in the past we have. We've talked about ancestral altars, but we haven't actually talked about what it means to build an altar, or for that matter, what an altar actually is. We almost take for granted the idea that when we say, do this work on your altar or build an altar, you know what we mean. So this is a great, you know, down to fundamentals and really deep topic. So Professor Ames, as our guest, how about you start us off a little bit and tell us what you mean by altar building and how you go about this work yourself?
It's very appropriate since having moved, I'm kind of recreating my whole altar space. I divide it broadly into three categories for me in my tradition.
Mm-hmm.
The first is ancestor altar. I think that's always a good way to begin. Calling your ancestors always gives you power, ties you into that lineage. And I think for most people, it's a simple table or container. I'm quite lucky. I inherited my great-great-grandmother's wooden treadle sewing machine. And I actually make that into the altar and call on a lot of that side of the family. I think a really good way to start getting into that is kind of know your family. Some people are very privileged to kind of know their ancestors from, you know, some great aunt that did genealogy. But, of course, with the Internet and websites and all ancestry.com and such, it's pretty easy to kind of start tracing back and finding things. Pictures and finding some home. And this is kind of what I think about, you know, the altars. Becomes their home within your house, right? So it's a place where they can reside, where you can make a connection with them, where you can venerate them, where you can give them offerings, where you can come and have that communication in a very specific space.
Mm-hmm.
The second type of altar that I do is what I think of my working spirits. So these are spirits that do things for me. They're different than my ancestors. And they're ones that I make some sort of a transaction with. So if I need divination work, if I need spiritual work, I use that. And then I have a third that's not really an altar. It's more of a work table. But I do try to keep it pretty sanctified, right? So I don't throw dirty laundry on it and fold the laundry or, you know, it has its special function. That's where I build things. That then usually get moved to another altar.
And you are an artist, so I'm sure that you, when you're saying my altar, it's probably a piece of art, because I saw some of your work, Professor Ames, and this is just incredible. Do you find yourself that you're incorporating art as part of, you know, how spirit moves you, or does it influence more how you can work with those altars?
Absolutely. I think it's part of the devotion that you bring to the altars. If you have that skill, if you have that talent, then I think you should give it your all, right? I think that you should make it as beautiful, as inviting as you can. I like to think of them as a little tableau sometimes, so that, you know, I really like to craft how things are sitting together. Obviously, you want to put certain things together. And the really beautiful part that I love is if you, by any chance, have items from your ancestors, a pocket watch, a pair of glasses, a book, a Bible, those really do make really great additions to
right.
that. And then, of course, we like to pretty it up with, you know, beautiful fabrics. I really like the old oil lamps, kerosene or oil lamps. Those are really nice to have on there. And, again, I have one from my grandmother that she had.
Mm.
So all those kind of make this really nice tableau. And you want it to be as beautiful as possible. I like to work on a wooden table.
That's a very interesting way of working. I like the way that you incorporate art, but I also love the way that you do. You have three different altars, and it's ancestral work, working spirits, and where you kind of do your general work, building things, making doll babies or whatnot, and then moving them to the other altars. It creates a very unique way of working. It's very beautiful. You know, just a quick mention here. Professor Ames, you were talking about ancestral altars, and Madame Nani, you talked about art. One of our newest members of AIR, so a shout out to her and great welcome to her, Michelle Jackson. She creates these, in addition to her offering of readings, and she does these wonderful bone readings, she also creates these ancestral, custom ancestral photo collages or photo shrines for ancestors, and it's a service that she provides. For people, something that people can check out. And it's really beautiful, the idea of creating this ancestral shrine through photo collages. And it's actually quite traditional, very old school. I know we talk a great deal about ancestral altars, traditionally in Southern conjure, there wasn't something called an ancestral altar. We use the term as anthropologists do. You know, we kind of look at it and go, we recognize what it is. That's an ancestral altar. But if you ask the average Baptist African-American about an ancestral altar, they give you kind of a cross look, like, what? I don't know, right? Right. But they had a special area where their ancestors were. Often it was a room where, sometimes called the angel room, where they had statues of angels, where they had a photo collage of their family and what we talked about previously in the show's family Bibles. So the idea of a photo collage is really, really old. While the term ancestor altar comes a little bit from the study of the spiritual practice as well as from outside tradition, the idea of creating an ancestral shrine through a photo collage is really old school hoodoo. So Michelle Jackson does something really unique there and taps into a really old tradition in hoodoo. Something definitely
that is
worth
very cool.
Madam Nadia, what do you do when it comes to altars?
I'm sorry?
And when it comes to altars, Madam Nadia, what is it that you do? Do you build up altars the way that Professor Ames does? Do you divide them up in that way?
I am very lucky to have something that I call my conjure dungeon. It's in the basement, and then the finished part of the basement. So I don't have any carpeting or anything on the floor, and I can, you know, burn candles straight on the floor. I can draw on the floor if I want. And outside of that, I also have a workbench that I sort of took over. And this is where I craft and make things that then go into my altar space. And my altar space, I feel, is constantly shifting, not so much with the seasons, but with the need. Right now, I have my big ancestral altar, and I also have like an alcove for my spirits, and I have an altar for love and money work, success work. Healing work, and then I have my Saint Cyprian space that can handle more intense or darker, I should say, work. But the positions themselves might be moving around depending on the work, and what I do is I consult my ancestors. Their place does not change, but I do use a necklace that is of my grandmother. I don't have, unfortunately, I'm not as lucky as Professor Ames. I pretty much don't have anything from my ancestors, but I do have that, and I use it as a pendulum. So whether I want to figure out if I have a blessing to work with clients or even an arrangement of the room, I would go to my ancestors and I would ask them, can I, you know, is this a good idea, moving this table over here and rearranging that? Would that be a good energy? And sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they say no, and, you know, I have to sit there and be an interior conjure decorator and figure out how I'm going to fit everything. But usually it works out. But they have a lot of say about how I am going to do those kind of things.
Well, that's interesting because we have two almost, we have the whole spectrum of altar building here. We have more fixed altars, like as Professor Ames did, which is very neat. And then for you, we have a much more dynamic sort of moving around. The altars shift and change in where you do the work. So that's very unique. And both of them are quite traditional. Both of them are found within Hulu. People have one surface where they kind of shift around and do whatever they want with. And they have other people have more fixed, more organized altars. When we say altars, what we refer to, and again, altar is a term that we kind of use anthropologically. A lot of conjure practitioners don't really say, I have an altar, or this is, you know, a type of magical space. They just have a space. And it was quite common that things like a dresser, you know, would become, quote unquote, an altar. They did their work right on top of the dresser in their bedroom. Conjure is a very practical tradition. I know Miss Kat talks about how one of her altars are on top of speakers, you know.
Oh.
So it's very traditional to kind of make use of the space that you have. To talk a little, just briefly, about my own altars and then the idea of altar building itself, I have a separate room where I do all my conjure work, and that room is my altar room. And the entire room is just one big altar, if you will. It's consecrated, all the spirits remain there, and it is where I do all my work. The jinn live there as well. They live in their various pots and their various objects. I have an ancestral altar. I don't work with ancestor photos, though we have photos of my ancestors. I work with an ancestral tree because we have a massive, massive tree that gets put on there. It also has a statue of St. Michael, as well as the rings that have been passed down in my family that contain the various jinns, as well as an ancestral knife, prayer bead, a specific ritual hat, various mementos, if you will, but not actual imagery, really. But that's where my ancestors are. I have one big altar that is along the wall, and that does where it's kind of where I do all my work. It's divided up so that the left side I do my dark work, the right side I do my light work, and in the middle I kind of do anything, you know, that blends both, like uncrossing work, blessing work, things like that. And then I have on the far left, I have my St. Cyprian altar with his shrine, various bones, various amulets, all sorts of wonderful things. And then against the other wall, I have a St. Santisima Muerte altar. So the entire room is kind of devoted to magical work. Now, when I say altars, for me, the idea of building up an altar is creating a spiritual crossroads, bringing the power, bringing magical power onto a surface. That surface becomes a crossroads of manifestation. And the more attention you put into an altar, the more it becomes really a power, you know, a force of manifestation.
Indeed, yes.
There are many people that talk about how their altars have become so central to their magic that just putting something on their altar can often have an effect. And that's what we really want to aim for when we create an altar. It's not just a surface, though it can look like that. It becomes an actual point of manifestation. So, Professor Ames, building a little bit on that, how do you build an altar so that it becomes that type of powerful force in your magical work?
It was interesting that you talked about a crossroads. I literally laid out in my previous altar. It was a large table, and I literally laid out with dirt and with powders a little crossroads. Put candles there, and that's kind of how I started with putting different herbs in there, and it did become this sort of nexus, sort of drawing down point for that. From there, I didn't have enough room, so then the herbs kind of went into an herb box, right? Mm-hmm. That I could use those as I was doing work on the altar. So I think that's a great way if you're starting fresh. There needs to be sort of some way to take whatever surface you're using and consecrate it. It can be as simple as, you know, wiping the top of that dresser with Florida water. It can be burning some candles on there, placing some cloth there, praying over it. There are lots of ways to kind of get that energy started. And then I think the more that you focus on it, the more you infuse it and do work on it, the richer that becomes, and things just begin to draw to it, just like you said.
Mm-hmm. And I have to share something with you guys. I had an experience this summer where I started working with very powerful hot spirits, and snakes were associated heavily with several of them. And within about a month, we realized that we have snakes living under our house, and they are just going towards that altar space. And it was a little bit freaky, you know. A lot of times we
That's
see
amazing.
Physical manifestations of things, you know, when we do work for ourselves or clients. But when you really see that, you're like, oh, I wasn't thinking about having snakes as pets, you
Real
know.
Snakes.
I don't know about that. Yeah. So I had to have a conversation with the snakes and say, listen, guys, I respect you. We can be good neighbors, but really not under my house.
What's the sign of that type of magnetic power of the altar, that you're working with snakes and snakes are actually naturally drawn to that area? So that's what we're talking about when we say altars. And I think one of the ways for me that kind of power is built for an altar is continuously building an altar. An altar is never, in my mind, truly finished. Well, we may say, oh, okay, I kind of did the initial work, now it's done, I do my work on it. But every time we add a little bit to an altar, we're out traveling the world and we see a bead, for example, and go, that bead would fit perfectly on my altar, or hung around a statue's neck, we pick up that bead. Or we go and we gather dirt from various places, or whatever it is, the more we add to the altar, the more attention we give, the more focus we give, the more it becomes a focal point of power. I mean, and it does build over time, and one of the ways of doing it, even unintentionally, is just working on the altars. Altars are beautiful, and they can become decorative pieces, they can become works of art, but they should never be treated as just works of art. They should be functional. You should be lighting candles on them. You should be regularly cleansing them. You should be putting new things on there. You should be doing work on there, because the more you are engaged with it, because when, you know, what do we say about conjure? It's work, right? Root work is work. The more you work with your altars, the more they become that type of focus of power. I want to ask both of you these questions as we're running a little bit out of time, but this is we can kind of wrap up with this. What is it that you do with your altars that is unique to your practice? You think that this is something that you kind of either came up with, or something that's become essential to altar work or altar building? I know some people, for example, Florida water, they have to wash their altars with Florida water, and other things. So what is it that's essential? Let's turn to Professor Ames, to you, when it comes to altar building, something that you can't be without when you're making an altar.
Oh, my goodness, that's a good question. One thing that I have started doing is, like I said, collecting things. Sometimes they're little objects like that. But one thing I've put some thought to is collecting dirt and waters. So I don't use them as often as probably I would want to in the actual work. But sometimes, you know, you've got a little container of, you know, dirt from a courthouse. Sure, you're going to use it in a court case.
Right.
But I believe not only are those things sitting there kind of interesting and unique, and they're things that I think about in connection to different physical places or waters and rivers and so on, but they are useful back again into the work. And I think, again, being on that altar, they gain power and they share power.
That's very true. That's wonderful. And that's also good advice for anyone who's interested in building altars, is that idea of gathering and keeping things on the altar space. Madam Nadia, what about yourself?
Well, it's very important for me to cleanse altars when things are shifting around. But really what I find, and that might sound a little bit maybe psychological, but I feel that when you have a truly working altar, it becomes extension of you, and you become an extension of that. So if you're truly making powerful work and you're there outside in the world, you're not necessarily by your altar, and you feel a shift. Something is going on. Maybe it's with a client, a family member. Maybe it's with you. My spirit automatically connects to my altars, and I feel that I start brewing this work that I'm not even there. And there is a very, very strong link, and as my altars shift, so do I shift. If I need to make a change, major change in my life, a lot of times it will start in the physical world by changing the altar.
That's very true. That also speaks to the idea of the altar becoming that point of manifestation where everything kind of changes. Very cool, very interesting. A wonderful topic, and a topic that we can go on and on about. And hopefully we can have a part two, Professor Ames, when you come back on the show. We can do another part two of altars, because this really is a topic that doesn't get discussed too much and is central to a lot of our work. And we kind of take for granted that people already know what we're talking about when we say, build an altar or do this on your altar. So very interesting topic. Thank you for that. Now it's time to turn to our callers, as this is what the show is all about, helping people. So Ms. Tammy Lee, guide us into our callers, if you would.
Mentally, and this week's special guest, and for our wonderful Miss Kat Matanadia of Matanadia.com, and also we'll be right back and joining us. We'll be taking calls from our listeners, answering their questions through spiritual divination, and prescribing down-home conjure remedies and remediation. Our calling clients are selected from among those who fill out a short questionnaire at the Lucky Mojo forum at forum.luckymojo.com. The show or listen by phone by dialing 818-394-8525. And if you have filled out a client questionnaire at the Lucky Mojo Forum, please dial in down to 818-394-8535 and press 1 to let us know that you're available to be on the air. If your area code is announced, we'd like you to say hello and let me, your announcer, Ms. Tammy Lee, read a brief description of your situation before turning it over to our host. Now it's time to go to the phones and take our first client. And our first client is calling in from the state of Idaho. This is Dina. Dina, are you there, caller?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Well, welcome to the show. I'm going to go ahead and let our host know that you've called in before March 15th. And you actually did receive a root work recommendation and had immediate results for during that show. Or you write during that show or after, I'm assuming, you went ahead and followed that advice. And here we go with your question, okay? About 6 months ago, I began apprenticing under a Cherokee shaman. I've been completing a sunrise sunset ceremonial prayers and felt as though all spirituality was drained from me the longer I continued under his study. Upon beginning this apprenticeship, she was excited and told me numerous times how much she enjoyed my energy. Recently, I stopped the style of ceremonial prayers and have felt spiritual, like myself again, yet still not centered. Has there been some type of style, either Native American or otherwise, of transcending to my core is spiritual self? So what are your recommendations?
Okay, we had a little bit of sound problems, but we got most of that. Dina, right? We understood your situation. You've been working with or apprenticing under a Cherokee shaman and doing some type of ceremonial work with them, but since the beginning of your work, you've started to feel your spirituality drained from you.
Correct.
And once you stopped the prayers, you felt spiritual and like yourself again. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Well, what we'll do is we'll do a little bit of a reading to see what's going on in the situation, and we can turn to what you can do. Let's have Madame Nanya do the first reading for you, okay?
Thank you.
Great. Well, Dina, as you were speaking, I was trying to tune in into the energy of what's being said, and I pulled a few cards. Actually, what I'm using today is a deck that's called Deste. It's something very new here in the United States. It's coming from Greece, and it's also quite popular in Turkey. And it has a lot of different elements from all these different decks and traditions. But what I can tell you is that I am not particularly keen on the person that you have been studying with, and I'll tell you why. The first card that I pulled is the snake, and the snake in this deck represents an enemy, somebody who is not going to take changes on your part lightly. If you change your mind, if you decide to ask questions or do something differently, this is not going to work, and this person will attack you and possibly attack you in private, in public. The other card that I see here is a child, and it's a child reverse. So it's something that if you are not going to clear yourself of this energy, it might really hit you in places that you were considering working through. And you, because this person has a certain power, a certain energy to them, and there is probably other students, then if you're in a little bit of a difficult position, because if you're going to come out with accusations, you will be put to shame, or people will be looking at you and saying, what is she talking about? And then in this deck, there's also spirit cards, and the spirit card that I pulled is Bedes, who is a card that comes from the realm of the emerald and of the water, and this specific spirit talks about harmony. So in my opinion, this is a good time for you to step back and really assess the situation and see what you can benefit from and what is not good for you, and be very logical about it, okay? I understand that it's a spiritual path. This is something that you want to grow in, but in this situation, you really have to be very logical to put your cards on the table, so to speak, and examine everything, because I think that the path is calling you, but this person is not necessarily a person who you can benefit from or that will take rejection in a healthy way. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So this is what I see, and I will let my colleagues continue and say what they see in the cards.
Thank you, Madam Nadia. Very, very instructive and illuminating reading. So let's turn to our guest, Professor Ames, and see what he sees in this particular situation. Professor Ames?
Okay. I'm reading the Lenormand cards today. It's a deck by Melissa Hill. And I drew five cards. The first is the tree, then the whip, the moon, the ring, and the child. So Lenormand is read in pairs. So this first two just really underscores what Madame Nadi was saying. Tree can be about spirituality. The whip is always about disagreements, almost abusiveness. So I feel, again, that I don't think this is a great person to be associated with. I feel that your spirituality essentially is getting beat up. I'm not sure what they were doing with you as far as ceremonies or whatever, but I do feel like there was some type of almost spiritual abuse going on there, or some attack on your spirituality. The moon there talks about things coming into prominence. Perhaps that she was a well-known teacher, but I think probably if you poked around, other students would say, yes, I'm feeling the same thing. I'm kind of getting that feeling as well. On the other side here, the ring and the child, I think this is sort of your way out. So finding some sort of a new commitment and a fresh start. You know, the ring is always about contracts and commitments. Child is a new beginning. Interesting, the child card came up twice here with mine and with Madame Nadia's. So I think finding out of the sort of pain that I feel from you, from kind of having to go through this, it is time for a fresh start. And I think that you're going to have to find, and I hate to use this term, but this sort of inner child, this sort of fresh, naive look at things again. It's hard to come out of a bad spiritual situation and not be put off by other types. But I think that is out for you, and sort of recommitting yourself to a new path for spiritual path.
Thank you for that, Professor James. I'm getting a very similar, feeling here. Now, one thing I will confess, I'm a little bit of confusion, but I'm not sure what you mean when you say, I felt my spirituality drain. Maybe it's just the terminology, because spirituality for me just refers to your personal beliefs. You know, no one can strip you of your personal beliefs. If you're feeling your spiritual power drain, that's a different thing. So I think I was a little confused about what exactly you meant by feeling your spirituality drained from you. But I do sense that in this case it may be best, especially since you've noticed that once you stop doing this work, that you're kind of reclaiming that power, that you're kind of being restored to the way that you were before, to stop your association with this person. This person may be bad for you, they may be a great teacher in general, but they may not be the teacher for you. Their teaching style may be dominating, they may think about the way that they do, and it could also very well be the fact that you're not meant to walk a path like that. You're forcing yourself onto a spiritual path that you're not particularly comfortable with, or a set of rites. For example, a person who's a free spirit may have a difficult time adhering to a path that requires rigid structure and ceremony where you have to do things at a certain time. So there could be a variety of things going on there. I would not automatically assume that this person is evil. They may be troublesome, they may be difficult, and they may be a danger to you, but don't automatically assume, you know, you're dealing with the devil. So what I would recommend is one practical step of cutting, you know, ties with this person and walking away. Then it's about recentering yourself, because you said you're kind of feeling your power come back, but you're not quite centered. What you need is a good old-fashioned cleansing, something to break the ties that you have with this person, something to kind of break any type of vampiric connection that there may be there, and to restore your own power. I would do this in two ways. First, I would do a cleansing work via a bath. And then I would follow this up with some protection work to ensure that just in case she does decide to talk ill or not take the disassociation quite well, that you're protected. In this case, a bath made out of basil, rue, and agrimony would be ideal. And you can brew that into a tea and wash yourself from head to toe in a bath. Basil is always good for removing evil, rue for breaking any type of curse, jinx, evil eye, negativity, and agrimony is the same for that. Agrimony also has a little bit of a harsher effect of kind of turning things back, or turning evil back. It has a very strong reflective capability. So you want to bathe yourself in that. I would recommend doing this over 7 days while the moon is waning. And every day that you bathe, what you want to do, and you want to allow yourself to air dry afterwards, and then gather a bit of the used bath water. Now, how do you gather used bath water? You make sure that you stopper your tub so that the water does not go all the way out, and you're able to scoop up some of the bath water, or you place a cup or bowl at your feet as you pour the spiritual bath over you. And that gathers the bath water. And you're going to take that used bath water after you've air dried and obviously put some clothes on, off to the crossroads. You can also do this at a tree or a river, but it needs to be off of your property. And the idea is that you're literally taking whatever residual is left and dumping it off of yourself, getting rid of it, off of your property, out of your life. And you're going to do this 7 days. And yes, you have to carry that water for 7 days. Do it every single day. While you're, California Flame asks, what do you do while you're air drawing? Meditate on the ritual. You could meditate or pray from your heart. It's a very good time to let yourself feel the cleansing taking place, feeling the power of the herbs as they dry on your skin, and praying as well is a very good thing to do while you air dry. Once you do that for 7 days, that will kind of help to center you again. It'll help to bring you back into, the place you were before this particular work. Next, you want to do some type of protection rite. And in this case, I would recommend a personal talisman. So since I believe the ring was brought up in one of the readings, we could actually consecrate or fix, to use the Hoodoo terminology, a ring for your protection. Not a ring that you necessarily have to wear. It's a ring that you could wear around your necklace if you want. You don't have to actually put it on your finger if you're not comfortable wearing rings. Rings can always be worn around the neck. But a ring would be particularly good in order to keep you safe. So I would recommend going out and getting a silver ring. Silver is always good for protection and is very strongly tied to the moon, as well as spirituality, psychic ability, and things like that. So the silver ring is what I would recommend. And what you're going to do, you're going to bring that ring home, and you're going to wash that ring in a special brew that you create. And it's going to be bay leaves, which is good for protection. It has a solar quality that turns evil back, and it's a very strong shield. You're going to use basil, which is excellent, again, mm-hmm. for turning away evil. And then you want another strong protective herb. I usually include a pinch of red pepper because I use fiery wall of protection. It's not a common use for red pepper, but red pepper is quite protective. If you're not comfortable with using a pinch of red pepper, you can substitute grains of paradise. And we talked about grains of paradise last time on the show. And grains of paradise are very protective. This comes out of the New Orleans tradition of using grains of paradise with St. Michael packets at your front door and your back door to protect your home. And it also has an empowering quality. So you put all those in some water, boil that, and then gently wash the ring as you pray Psalm 91. Okay, and you're going to wash the ring in this protective wash, filling it with the powers of those herbs. Let the ring air dry. You know, you let it dry for a little bit, set it aside on a towel, and then you're going to put it on an altar or whatever surface, and you're going to dress it lightly with either protection oil, or you're going to dress it with fiery wall of protection. And then you're going to take an overturned saucer or a cup, and you're going to place it over the ring, and you're going to take a white candle, and you're going to dress that with fiery wall of protection, and you're going to set that over the overturned saucer so that the candle is burning on top of the ring. And then that's what this does, is it brings the power of that candle right into the ring itself. And you're going to light the candle and pray Psalm 91. For 7 days while the moon is waxing, you're going to light candles. So 7 candles total, filling that ring with the power of protection, calling on the power of St. Michael to protect you and shield you and raise up his fiery sword in defense of you. On the 7th day, you're going to take out the ring from underneath the cup of the overturned saucer, dress it again with a little bit of fiery wall of protection oil, light yourself some incense. You can use fiery wall of protection incense, or you can make a blend out of the basil and the guinea peppers and smoke it in that incense. That ring then becomes your protector. You can wear that ring on your finger. You can wear it around your neck, hung from a necklace. If you hang it from a necklace, it will also act as a warning sign to you. Should the necklace ever fall or the string ever break, it's taken a hit for you. You just wash it, and then you can reuse it. The other thing is, if the ring gets discolored, that's also a warning sign that you're being thrown for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So these are some things to bear in mind, and that will be a protective ring for you. I sense that the combination of these two is all that you need, and then you'll be all set to go. Does that answer your question, Dina?
It does. I really do appreciate your advice, but my one main question is, do you believe that she has tapped into me? Because I was doing some research, because I'm a research-oriented person, and it's called TWIT. It's where a more powerful shaman will try to actually energetically attach themselves to you to gain more power themselves. Do you see that, or is it more the initial stages for me right now where I need to be aware?
You just need to be aware, but we do really have to move on, and we can't answer any further
questions.
But what I can tell you is that it's not as serious as you may be worried about. It's
yes.
not.
Yes.
There is a vampiric quality. There's certainly a dominating quality, but this isn't like an all-out magical war. This woman isn't trying to take over your soul or anything like that.
Yeah.
I didn't say so, but thank you very much for your help, and I will do as you asked, and thank you for your time today.
You're very welcome.
You should be fine. Just wear that ring, and you'll be set to go. Nothing further to be worried about. Thank you for your call. Miss Tammy Lee, if you can take us forward, my dear.
Yes. Hey, and all support for this program by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers there, a direct. Women'sLibertyWomen.org. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of missionary independent spiritual churches located online at crystalsilence.org. Now it's time to go to the phones and take our next client. And our next client is calling in from New Jersey. And this is Pantera. Pantera, are you there, caller?
I'm here.
Pantera from New Jersey. Hi. Welcome
Hi.
To the show. Hi. I'm going to go ahead and let our host know.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I'm a little bit. I can barely hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay, Ventura, I'm going to go ahead and let our host know that this is your first time calling into the show, that you have not yet gone to any of the readers and rulers.
Right.
Okay? And read a brief synopsis of your case for our host. And she writes, I help run a business, and I'm having trouble building a clientele. I feel stagnant and invisible, and it feels as if people are different from me, and what I have is causing trouble for me. Coupled with this, I've made very bad business decisions. An agreement that we should have never made.
Ms. Timmy, if you don't mind, I'm going to take over here because you're cutting in and out and we can't hear the description, but we will definitely check in with you with the next caller. Let me just briefly read this. I help run a business and having trouble building clientele. I feel stagnant and invisible and feel as if people are indifferent to me and what I have to offer. I'm pretty sure a rival slash enemy is causing trouble for me. Coupled with this, my partner has made a very bad decisions that bound us to an agreement we never should have made. I am in need of forward motion, but it seems no matter what I do, there is no favorable change. Retiring is starting to look like a good option. I would like some insight on what to do next to improve things. Now, we do have a couple things here going on. What you have is a business situation that's gone wrong. And you're asking questions if one has gone wrong and what you can do about it. Do I understand you correctly?
Yes. That's pretty much the gist of it.
Okay, well, what we'll do is I'll start off this reading, and we'll focus on specifically why things are kind of going the way they are if you really indeed have an enemy. And then during the root work consultation, we can discuss what you can do about the situation, whether it's time to walk away or if there is magical work done. Now, I have pulled one card here, as well as scrying with my own ring. The card that I have here is the Queen of Swords. The Queen of Swords does, to me, indicate a evil eye type of situation. It shows a woman who may not necessarily actively do work against you, but is also quite harsh and closed off to you. And looking into my ring, I have the image of a scorpion. This is an evil eye situation very clearly. This is a person where there's envy attached into the situation. There is indeed a rival. I would specifically be careful of the tongue, the wagging tongue, and gossip and speaking behind your back, because that's undermining your clientele and your business a great deal. So I would double check to see if there's any type of chatter going on, because from what I can see with my reading, is that while no one's sitting there actually lighting black candles on top of you, what they are definitely doing is spreading some ill will, and they are talking ill about you, and that is undermining your ability to build a clientele. So keep your ear to the ground from gossip more than anything else. There is a rival in this particular situation. What you can do about this is it looks like cleansing work will be required. I do sense that this business is not completely dead. I see a coin in my ring indicating that there is a chance for this situation to be revived, you know, and you don't have to worry about you completely going under. You're just going to need some spiritual help to move things along, some protection work and some money drawing work. And again, to really focus on kind of stop gossipy type things, because it looks like there's a wagging tongue that's causing a great deal of malice and danger in your situation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and I'm going to turn this over to Madam Nadia to do the reading, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Pantera. Thank you for thank you for letting us read for you. And again, I'm going to be using the Desta deck. And while Conjurman Ali was speaking, I pulled some cards here for you. And first and foremost, I want to tell you that your business is not done yet. There is an opportunity here. Because in this deck, there are two spirits that represent the dark and the light. And the spirit of the light is a tardy. And if she shows up in a spread, it means that no matter what's going on, it's going to things are going to work out. And she showed up for you. However, the next card is the Stars reverse. And the Stars reverse is exactly the situation that you're describing. It's a situation where you are being forgotten. Your fame is disappearing. It's like people are not paying attention to you, and it creates a lot of anxiety and a lot of anger for you. And the next card that I pulled is the Dervish. And in this case, it tells me that you can do cleansing work. You can do some work around it, but I would highly recommend going to get some work done for you by a professional, because I feel that your social connections to the people that are involved around will not allow you. You won't be able to sit there and be very objective and, you know, fix that situation and affect those people, because somewhere in the back of your mind you'll be asking, oh, maybe they're not really, you know, talking bad stuff about me behind my back or what, because they do. They do. Somebody is specifically walking around and trying to take your fame from you. And the advice card is Solana Reverse. And Solana Reverse talks about not being able to build step by step. So what this energy, what the situation that you're in is that you're starting to work on what's going on. And then because you don't feel like you're progressing, everything falls apart, and your that build-up, that momentum is gone. So you need to sit very, very, you know, meditatively on this, very objectively, and figure out who is the person that's spreading those rumors that doesn't want you to be successful. And it doesn't feel to me like it's about the business. It's about you. They don't want to be the shining star. And with that information, I would highly recommend to go to somebody, spiritual worker, the dervish can be a male or a female. In this case, I do feel that it needs to be a male. Because I feel that the person who is talking behind your back is not a woman, it's a male.
Wow.
So this would be my recommendation. But with authority being here, your situation definitely can be switched around and you can shine like a star. So this is what I see, and I'm really curious to see what Professor Ames is going to tell us about the conjure work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you kind of have a multi-phase issue here. I think that the best thing, and following on the advice of having someone come in, do a really thorough cleansing of your space. You can have someone come do that. You know, Chinese wash is always good. Anything with lemongrass, vanvan, any of that bright, sharp, to kind of clear out things. Because you also mentioned that your partner had made some very bad business decisions, right? So I think that is also kind of weighing down that. So you need to kind of clear the space. Some things they might do is fumigate the space with a cleansing incense, camphor, and Florida water. Camphor is always a really good, strong cleansing thing. So cleaning or cleansing the entire space, and you would go back to front, washing all the surfaces, the floors, mopping toward the front, and then out in the street and out into the gutters. I would and then toss it into the gutters or crossway to get all that out, just like Conjurman Ellsley describing with the bath, right? So you've got to kind of wash it down. The second phase of this, talking about the evil eye, if you've probably seen them, and they're fairly easy to find. I know Lucky Mojo has them. The blue beads that look like an eye. I would invest in one of those. I feel like you want to put it probably two. I would do something over the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And one on the back wall, just as you kind of see straight to the back, if you've got that space. And that's going to kind of protect that whole space from that nagging, evil eye kind of feeling. You may also, there's lots of really nice jewelry that you could also wear, since a lot of this is about your personality. You know, a bead around the neck, bracelets, all that's very possible. I'm also just, there's a curio called a bat's head nut. And it's a ling nut is what it actually is. I would consecrate that. I would put some protective wall, fiery wall of protection, and then that is what I would put over your entrance door. They're really interesting, unique. They're like two-horned. They're nuts, bathead nuts. That was my suggestion, to kind of clear the space, protect yourself. Then the next couple things I would do is drawing in and gaining some business. So I would do a wash from the sidewalk in toward the house, and I would put money drawing into a bucket of wash water. I'd put a piece of pyrite for money, some cinnamon, alfalfa, nutmeg, allspice, all that smells really good. A little bit of sugar. You don't want it to be a sticky mess. And that's going to sweeten and draw people into the business. And you basically would mop with a broom, wet, sweep that toward and into the building, just like people are going to walk and step into your business. And the final thing I would do more around you is I assume I'm going to get very – this is Cat Ironwood speech. I wish you were here. Do you have a website? Do you have business cards?
Yes.
Do you have a social presence? So
yes.
Rely on those. I drew some cards as well, and I see the garden and the moon. That's about social media presence. Really hit that hard. That's how people communicate. That's how people know you. A Twitter feed. Facebook, all of that presence, you really need to sort of amp up. That's a more mundane sort of approach to things. Make sure your website is easy to get to, that you have a good URL. You can listen back to Kat go on about this in some previous episodes, and she does a beautiful job of it. She's great with that. And I would dress my cards with a combination of look me over, sachet powder, you can do that. And because you have a rival, you may also want to burn a candle or dress your cards with I can, you can't.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And I think that sort of, you've got this rival that is challenging your space in the business realm. And I would push that. Dress your cards, definitely. Hand them out wherever you can. Leave them at grocery stores and coffee shops, anywhere where people can pick them up.
Okay.
I would love to add something if we have time.
Briefly, please.
Very shortly. So first of all, if you know who the person is that is talking smack about you, please take a red candle, write their name on it, and start it with some herbs that will shut them up. Cloves would be really good. Just be careful, because that whole thing is going to go on fire. And also get yourself a good mojo bag, because it's about you shining. There's something about them not wanting you to shine more than them or something else. So make yourself a little mojo bag. Put some Solomon seal, high John chips, or Queen Elizabeth, devil shoestring, five finger grass, dragon's blood, you know, things like that, even a little star in there. And what I would do for 7 days, I will surround that mojo with seven little white candles and light seven candles every day and have a magnifying glass looking over that mojo back on the last day. You will, you know, smoke it with cigar if this is, you know, something that you're comfortable with, or with Crown of Success incense while you're praying that you're shining like a star. And believe me, that the mouth of that person is going to be shut for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Good work. The key, I really like some points that I want to highlight here real quickly. First and foremost, the red candle with the cloves is a very old traditional way of working, but do bear in mind that cloves has a friendship element. More often than not, using cloves in that fashion is aimed at making the person only talk good about you.
Mm-hmm,
so it's a little
mm-hmm.
different than, for example, using bitter aloes, which is like to shut their mouth completely. So that's a very good way of working, is aiming to making sure that if there's talk, it's only positive talk. The other thing is that Professor Ames said, make sure you handle the practical things, because this trouble is not just spiritual. You guys also made a bad business decision. So I mean, handling things from a practical end is very important. Do you have a physical store, is the question.
It's home based actually. You know, it's not even a store. It's more of a music thing.
Great, that's fine. One of the things that I want you to consider is some of the great suggestions they all give. Set aside a surface, since it's the topic of this week, for an altar for prosperity just for your business. So a space dedicated just for your business, okay? Where you can do all these works like the mojo bag and things like that. And that's all the time we unfortunately have. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for trusting us with your situation. And we do wish you all the best. Be sure to check in with us and let us know how things turn out.
Definitely.
And we hope that you have success, okay?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And Ms. Tammy Lee, if you'd be so kind as to guide us forward.
Yes. Yes, sir, Conjumana Lee. Y'all, the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour is the first show of its type ever to be made available to the public, and it remains the longest-running folk magic radio show to date. Listen by telephone or listen to the archive podcast in iTunes. Either way, you're going to love it. To be selected to be on the air, sign up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. Pindell 818-394-8535 during the show and press the number 1 to let the host know that you're available to be on the air. If your call is chosen, you'll get a free reading and rootwork consultation with your hosts, Catherine Ironwood of LuckyMojo.com and Conjumana Lee of ConjumanaLee.com. And thank you so much, Madam Nadia of MadamNadia.com, for joining us and then filling in for Miss Kath this week. And, of course, our special guest this week, Professor Ames. Tune in every week at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour. Now we're going to go ahead and go to the phones and take our next client who's calling in from area code 646. This is Steele. Steele, are you there, caller from New Jersey?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Welcome to the show. I'm going to go ahead and thank you so much for joining us and for typing things in. I want to go ahead and let Conjumana Lee certainly know that you are a client of his, and of course our Miss Kat, and you had a reading with Conjumana Lee approximately 3 months ago and Miss Kat 6 weeks ago, and you are going ahead and here we go. Here's the brief synopsis of your situation. She writes, I've been dating a married man, an ex-boyfriend of mine from a distant past, for the past year. He broke things off with me 6 weeks ago when he realized his feelings were becoming stronger than he could control. He's concerned that he would be too tempted to leave the family unit, and he doesn't want to do that to his kids. He said, however, that he would take this time apart to reevaluate his life, and if he finds our separation to be too difficult, he would find me again. Is the separation difficult? Does he think about it, and will he be back? Will he at least contact me at some point on some level? And the silence is becoming too much. Thank you. Turning it back over to you, Conjumana Lee.
Thank you, Ms. Tammy Lee. If we can have our wonderful guest, Professor Ames, take the first reading on this one.
Hi, yes. So a couple of questions that you had in there. Does he think about you? Is he basically going to return to you? I'm looking at my little Norman card. They did a whole grand tableau spread just so I could see all the different dynamics here. I am seeing him pretty anchored in his family life, and I think that
for you, your concern about this being a continuing relationship starts to fade. There is definitely the presence of the other woman, and I think that the children play a big part in this. So will he contact you? I think he will. I have the birds here. It may be brief. It may be on the fly. I don't think it's going to be a major sit-down discussion to kind of weigh everything out. But right now, unfortunately, it looks like his focus is going to remain with his family.
Yeah, that's a wonderful reading, Professor Ames. I have done a geomantic reading real quick, and I'm going to mention some of the things that come up in your chart that tells us a little bit about what's going on here. First and foremost, we have Karsha in the first house. The situation is a little bit blocked, and you yourself feel very trapped. You're unable to kind of move forward. And thoughts of commitment and thoughts of what's going on and what the future holds for you is kind of keeping you where you are right now. Though he himself has said we need to separate and see how we feel, you have not been able to do the same. He has been able to remove himself from the situation. You haven't. Your heart still is locked here. Your heart is definitely very much in this situation, and you're having a hard time. I can feel it. I can see it, and Karsha really, really speaks to that. The next figure that we have here is Quinyumakyo, and this is in the seventh house. The seventh house is about love, and this tells us, will you two get back together? Well, Quinyumakyo tells us you will certainly hear from him again. However, Quinyumakyo is, which literally translates to conjunction, is a crossroad. It is a passive figure, and it indicates that there will be some movement and some success, but not entirely what you hope. So I don't see a full return of this man in the terms of you two him leaving his life behind and getting back together with you. I don't see that. I do see contact. You can probably expect contact around December is the sense that I'm getting.
Around when?
Around December time is when you can expect to hear from him again. Probably early January, but you will hear from him again, and that's the time frame to look for. So Nyumkyu also passed into the sixth house. Be aware that there is an illness that will be coming up for him quite shortly. And it's after that illness that he's dealt with, after that kind of sickness, so to speak, that he's going to reach out to you. That's when he's going to feel the loss more than ever, so to speak. He's going to feel that he misses you. But on the same note, that sickness is also going to reaffirm his commitment to staying with his family, okay? Mm-hmm. Because we also see Kunyunkyo pass into the second house, the house of finance. The financial situation here is something that plays very heavily on his mind. Yes, he doesn't want to break up his family unit, and his children are absolutely essential here. But he's also weighing the cost and benefit, and he's certainly considering how much a divorce would cost. And it seems like financially, he's just not in a place where he wants to risk it. So what you can expect from this person is that he will contact you, that he will get a hold of you, that he is missing you to a certain degree. But that when a push comes to shove, he's going to remain in his family situation for now, that his finances are going to be a primary concern along with his children, that he's going to reach out to you, but he's also going to be committed to his family, staying with his family unit. Be also very careful that he doesn't try to draw you back kind of into a short-term affair, meaning that he has a little fling and then he vanishes on you, because it's very likely here that he'll say, oh, you know, I miss you, let's meet up, and things kind of get heated, and then he vanishes on you. So don't let that happen to you, because, you know, you should value yourself and what you bring into this relationship. That's what I get out of this. So let's turn this over to Madam Nadia and see what she recommends in terms of root work for this situation, okay?
Well, my dear, this is sort of the crossroads of your heart when you need to make decisions. And, you know, whether you want to continue working on drawing this man into your life, even though you got a couple of readings from a very, very, very respectable readers that say, he'll be in touch, but it's not going to be what you want, or do you want to move on and allow yourself to meet somebody else? And this is, you know, this is a decision that only you can make. Whatever is your decision, and oftentimes we tend to think about, you know, I'm going to bring this guy. If this is the route that you're going to go, I'm again going to invoke our beloved Miss Kat here and say, if you are going to bring this guy back or work on it, set a time limit. Because
yes,
it will drive you absolutely insane, and it feels to me that he's the kind of guy that knows you well enough, and he can, you know, call you once in a while, but that's going to be exactly in the right time, and you're going to be all excited, and you're going to think, oh, here we are, we're going to go back together, and then he's going to disappear, and you're going to be sitting there by the phone, you know, dressed up with nowhere to go. So this is your call where you, you know, you need to decide what you want to do. Have you ever, have you done work on this guy before?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. Do you have a honey jar going? What do you have there?
Yes. Yep. I have a honey jar, and I have some contact spells going.
Okay. So first and foremost, if you wanted to bring him back, I suggest heating up that honey jar and adding items like ginger, you know, cinnamon to heat it up really well so he misses you, so he thinks about you. Setting up 4 candles or even 6 candles around the honey jar, also dressed with return to me, reconciliation, and so forth to bring him back to you. If you're going to be making a mojo bag, you know, you can put some Damiana and Balm of Gilead, which is good for sort of sweetening things up, and if you have his personal concern, this is a type of mojo that you can make. Also, something that I like to do, if you already work with this honey jar, and I don't know if you are going all the way into separating him from his wife and doing this kind of work, but instead of working just on a tray or an altar, put a map. Print out a map of where he is and take like a little tiny figure, baptize it for him. If you want to wrap around some of his personal concerns, you can do that, even tape to that. And then every day move that figure from where he is on the map, geographically really, towards your honey jar with him coming to you. You can also always use a skull candle where you work that skull candle, baptizing it for him and talking to it every night. You know, Johnny, you will not know that I'm talking to you. This is a dream, but you really want to call me back. You cannot stop thinking about me. Every time you close your eyes, you see me, you miss me, you desire me. You cannot breathe without me. Come back to me. I am your safe spot. So this is work that you can definitely do to enhance your reconciliation. But if you go the other way, cut and clear, my friend. Works magic and brings very quickly to your life somebody who is going to be able to commit to stay with you, to adore you, and you're going to throw in some of the qualities that you actually like in your current man with dropping the stuff that doesn't work for you, like a family and children, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's definitely something to consider, because going forward, if you do love work for this man, which you're fully, you know, fully within your right to do, I have to say something very important here, though. There is going to be a limit to what you can achieve, because all the readings show that he's not ready to leave. Professor Ames says he's not ready to leave. Neva Ein says he's not ready to leave. Madame Nadia also kind of picks up on that. And so the idea here is that even if you do magical work, there's only a limit of what you can achieve with this man. That may be if the extent you get is an effect. And if that's
comfortable with,
then that's what you're comfortable with. But if you want a man who's fully and completely yours, then a cut and clear is something that you should seriously consider. But if you want to give it one last shot, do so, but definitely with the idea in mind that you do this with a deadline. Because you're, or a timeline, because you have your life to live and you can't wait around for this man forever just because he wants to see if he's going to miss you while he's away. You know, that's a little bit unfair for you. So do take our advice to heart, and we do wish you all the best. Do let us know how things turn out, and thank you for trusting us with your call, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
Miss Tammy Lee, if you can guide us into our next segment.
Yes, sir, Conjurman Ali, and y'all, the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour from coast to coast and around the world is brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. To be selected to be on the air, sign up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. Then call in during the show and press the number 1 to let the host know that you'd like to be on the show. If your call is selected, you will get a free consultation with the best workers in the field. Tune in at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time each and every Sunday here on Block Talk Radio. And now we're going to go ahead and go into our free spell segment with Professor Ames, who is joining us from SkullBoneEmporium.com in Fort Collins, Colorado. Professor Ames.
Thank you, Ms. Tammy Lee. Skullbone Emporium, a lot of people think it's about skulls and so on. It actually was named after a very small town in Tennessee where part of my family comes from, Skullbone, Tennessee. And it was named that because they were bare-knuckle boxers and they would smack each other on the head. So that's the origins of it. But, of course, I think as a nice segue to ancestors, talking about altars and ancestors, and a spell. And in fact, Madam Nadi just mentioned using a candle, a skull candle. I love these. They're great. They come in different forms, different sizes. I've been using them recently for a couple reasons. But certainly you can use them on your altar to stand in for an ancestor you don't have any other connection to, no pictures of. You can dress it with, I would say, mugwort. Would be a really good key to kind of bathe it in. And instead of lighting it, just keep it there as a solid thing. And you can, of course, scribe someone's name on it. What I've been using it for recently is to get someone to think about someone else, right? So I have clients say, oh, I wish you would just think of me, and I want her to talk to me. I want her to be on her mind all the time. So I take the skull candle, and I usually on the bottom I will with a metal tool or a nail, inscribe the target's name. Then I will dress it with various oils. Sometimes it's clarity oil. I really like using that. Sometimes it's love me, return to me, whatever the situation is. Really bathe the skull. And as you're bathing it in the oils, talk to it. You know, that's where you sort of infuse your intent. Think about so-and-so all the time. Keep them on your mind. Then what I do is I take the picture of my client, the person that wants to be thought about, and I lay it on the top, and I start piercing it with stick pins so that you're sort of driving the idea of that person into their brain and then leaving the picture of them just sitting right on the top of their skull, right, so that they will continue to think of them. Very simple spell. A variation on this, sometimes you want people to talk to you. You can dig through, take a sharp tool and dig a hole into the mouth. And I've stuffed things in there like chia seed, slippery elms to kind of ease the tongue. Deer's tongue is an excellent one. Solomon seal. Those are all really good herbs to kind of feed into the mouth to make them want to talk more, to be more communicative with you as well. And the sort of final variation, which I thought was kind of interesting with a couple of clients I had recently, it's like, think of me, stop thinking about someone else. So I put the skull candle on a small glass saucer, and then that sits in turn on a bowl. You have to be sure it's pretty stable. in that bowl, I put a picture of the other person, right, the ex-boyfriend, the ex-girlfriend, whatever it is, the person they want to get rid of. And I douse it really well with bleach. So they start to fade away.
Mm-hmm.
So they get erased from the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You could also use hydrogen peroxide. You could use acetone, nail polish remover, depending on how tough it is to get rid of them. And that just dissolves them and makes them go away.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're drawing in the idea of this desired person on their brain, then below them, they're suddenly dissolving and getting rid of and vanishing the other person.
That is beautiful work.
Very cool. Very
I love
cool.
gold candles. And, you know, you can keep that for a long time and just use as an object rather than burning it. And then, of course, when the sort of spell work is complete, you might want to have an additional ceremony where you actually burn the candle, the skull candle.
Right. The purpose of the skull candle is to actually burn it in the end anyway. But that's excellent work. Beautiful, beautiful works, Professor Aim. There's a good reason in the Skull Bone Emporium. absolutely beautiful. An additional fluid that you can use is ammonia, which is quite common for
removing
things. So something to consider to dissolve the photo in is ammonia, but absolutely beautiful works. Thank you for that, and thank you, you know, for teaching us a variety of different ways and why you were worthy of having the skull bone emporium. Very interesting, and also different ways of looking at it, because we often look at skull candles in only one way, or working in this way, in one way. But this is thinking a little bit outside of the box, I think.
They're very flexible, I think.
Yeah,
and I think that's one of the toughest things in conjure is how do you influence someone's mind, you know?
Yes.
How do you change
very
their
true.
Mind? How do you make them think a certain way?
Right.
It's a very
it is. You know, people often talk about saying, oh, reconciliation is the hardest work that you ever do. And I say, no. All work is the same. The hardest work is getting someone to do what you want them to do.
Yeah, manipulation and mind control,
right.
Just like the government.
But if you get that down, a great deal of other works click into place, because you can use that for love. You can use it for getting your boss to pay you more. You can use it to get someone to call you. You can get it to, you know, convince your business partner to do something. You can get it to, you know, to get hired. So there's a variety of different ways that those can be used. So very interesting. We thank you for that, and thank you for being an awesome guest. Let's turn
thank
this over to
thank you,
Ms. Tammy Lee, to, you know, take us out.
Yes, sir, Conjurman Ali, and thank you so much, Conjurman Ali, and thank you, Madam Nadia of MadamNadia.com, for co-hosting in with us for our own Miss Cat of LuckyMojo.com. We also want to thank Professor Ames for being our special guest member from AIR this week of the SkullBoneEmporium.com in Fort Collins, Colorado. We invite you to tune in next week when our special guest member from the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers will be Kyra Mond of ConjuringTheCity.com in Berkeley, California. And once again, y'all, we've come to the end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Miss Cat via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and Conjurman Ali at conjurmanali.com in Mission Viejo. I'm your announcer, Miss Tammy Lee, joining you from TripleCrownConjure.com in Pensacola, Florida. And the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via the luckymojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to thank you so much for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at this same time when you will hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you for that, Miss Amy. Thank you, as always, for being a wonderful addition and helping us kind of guide the show forward. And thank you for Tanaka Kiva, who was such a support and managed to pop online and handle the board. It is wonderful. Thank you to Madam Nadia for filling in for Miss Cat. You were always gracious. And of course, Professor Ames, a wonderful guest who brought some amazing insights into altar work, skulls, or candles, and unique ways of working. So thank you for joining us, and I hope you'll join us again next time for a part two of the competition, which is so interesting.
Absolutely, thank you.
Thank you to everyone for joining us on the radio show. This is only made possible by the wonderful people who listen and join us in the chat. I do want to give a brief shout-out to Michelle Jackson, our latest member in AIR. Be sure to go to readersandlisteners.org and check out her profile. Thanks, everyone, and have a great evening.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.